is digital marketer. Today, it's Elliot Clark from Apartment Bartender.
So, Elliot Clark, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm really glad to be here.
That's awesome. So, you are Apartment Bartender, and you have 55,100 followers on Instagram. Right. But before we get into like all that stuff, I want to know, before you were Elliot Clark, Apartment Bartender,
right?
Who was Elliot Clark?
Yeah, I worked at Yelp, actually. And then during that period of time, I got really into home bartending, really into making drinks at home, and got really into taking pictures of those drinks, and had nowhere to post it other than Instagram. I didn't know how to build a website or anything, or I had really no desire to. So ended up doing that, and then that kind of launched into something really fun, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, when you're doing something really fun, especially booze related, it's like, at the end of the day, it's the drink world and lifestyle world, and it's a fun world to be in. So that's what I like about it.
So you eventually became Apartment Bartender. You are at 55.1 Instagram followers, thousands of them. That's thousands of people. One, how does that feel?
So it didn't feel real to me until people started recognizing me at bars. It's really interesting because I didn't ever start out with the intention of it being anything. So for it to have reached where it's at, I mean, 55,000 in the grand scheme of, you know, if you kind of stack it up against some of those, I never really thought like that, oh, this is that much.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did realize is that 55,000 in this industry is a lot. And so when it became real, I was in London, I was working on a project, and I walked into a bar, and it was one of the better cocktail bars in London. And somebody at the bar was there with their spouse or their significant other. And when I walked up to the bar and I ordered a drink, the person turned and they said, "You're Apartment Bartender." And I was in London, and I lived in, at that time, lived in Phoenix. So that's when it became kind of like, holy crap, this is pretty cool that at least people recognize me for, you know, the content and the drinks and stuff like that.
So did growth come before you were a brand, or did brand come before you were growth? And how did those two kind of play into one another?
Growth came before I was a brand. So when I started it, there were a few lucky breaks in terms of the growth, but it really was just me making drinks. Actually, in the beginning, I would say for the first probably year, about 9 months to a year, actually, nobody knew who I was. Nobody knew who I looked, what I looked like, because I didn't post myself. I didn't talk about myself. It was just purely the cocktails. And I did have a funny story wrapped in there. At the time, I lived in what I call a crappy apartment, and I had a roommate, and he was kind of a little party guy. And so as I started learning how to make cocktails, he was kind of my guinea pig. So I'd make these drinks and just see what he thought of it. So I'd just post some funny stuff that he would say throughout the day in the captions, and then post a cocktail to go along with it. So that's kind of how it grew. It really grew very organically. Mm-hmm. And then again, like, I'm probably late to the game in the sense of realizing that this is something outside of myself. It's something bigger than myself. It's actually become a brand on its own. And so it's just right now I'm in the process of building something outside of myself, and it's going really well. But it took me a while to realize and accept the fact that, like, hey, this is not just a guy that likes to make drinks. It can be that, and that's an element to it, but it's so much more, and it has become so much more than where it started.
During the process, did you kind of figure out, like, narrow in on who you serve?
I think there are different customer segments, right? Or there's different people that engage with me. You know, for me, personally, with Apartment Bartender, I have a really big home consumer base, right? They're the person that really enjoys hosting, really enjoys elevated experiences at home, and they're going to take that extra step and craft a cocktail for Christmas, you know, different moments like Super Bowl's coming up, Valentine's Day's coming up. So I create content geared towards them, you know, the people that are going to go and recreate those cocktails at home so that they can have a good experience at home. And that's a big, big part of my following. Another big part is really industry focused. So those are the bartenders, brand ambassadors, agencies, stuff like that, where they're not necessarily looking for a drink recipe. Bartenders, people in the industry are thinking about themselves outside of just what they do, and they're trying to learn, how do I brand myself? How do I create content? How do I take a good photo of my drinks and post it and post in a way that is consistent with the overarching brand that I represent? Because a lot of brand ambassadors, for example, have part of their key performance indicators is taking the brand and proliferating that on their own social channels. So there are different segments. And so for them, I released a what I called a Drinkstagramming guide.
Oh,
and it
my
was
gosh.
Like a really comprehensive guide on like, hey, this is basically my entire process in a guide. And now the last segment has been direct to brand relationships. So they approach me and I create digital content for brands in this drink and lifestyle area. And then also amplify that across different media partners that I have, like Esquire, Huckberry, and different things. So it's a really fun world. It's like everybody is very collaborative. And there's the thing I love about drinks is that there's a drink for everybody, in my opinion. And that mindset is kind of how everybody meshes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's very this abundance mindset. Like you're not competing, you're helping each other out.
Absolutely.
And you're all working together to serve a certain demographic or a certain kind of person.
Absolutely. And I really do think that kind of thought is counterintuitive, especially in the world of business and marketing and branding. And one of the things working with global liquor brands, you know, I've worked with the world's biggest brands, and it's like, just because you have a big budget doesn't mean that your message will resonate, or just because you throw money at something doesn't mean. So there's a lot of competition, but it's shifting your mindset away from competing with others. And like for me, I've approached it from the mindset of like, I want everybody to win. If I help you get what you want and you help me get what I want, then everybody's going to be solid, you know, and at the end, it's just better for the end user, you know, or the people that we're serving. Because in the end, I think that's what's most important is, are we creating something that is serving and adding value to people? And if not, then I think you just have to recheck your process, because I believe that's a big part of just success in business in general.
Let's take it from a different perspective. So if we go from the brand perspective, people who do want to work with brand ambassadors or influencers, number one, how would you define the difference between an influencer and a brand ambassador?
So a brand ambassador, at least how it works in the spirits world, is they are either part-time or full-time, and they are responsible for getting the brand in different key accounts and stuff. So that's a world in itself. But the term brand ambassador, I do think in a sense, influencers are brand ambassadors. So just without any brand partnerships and stuff, for me, I am categorized as an influencer in the drink space. I think apartment bartender crosses over into other industries. So you have lifestyle, travel, because I am on the road. So apartment bartender has really shifted towards my lifestyle more as opposed to just strictly cocktails and booze. But in a sense, when I do have brand partnerships, you are representing that brand, right? And they're vice versa. They're representing me. And so that partnership, in a sense, creates and shifts me into being an ambassador for them. So I think influencers have an element of being a brand ambassador, but I think influence has just kind of become a term we use and throw around now, but it really is trust. Like I have a trust that I've built up with people that follow me, and the way I would kind of describe it in a very simple way is like, if you come to me and you say, hey, I'm looking for a good bourbon, you know, what do you recommend? I'm going to tell you what I think is good. I've built up enough experience and stuff where I'm going to tell you, hey, I think you should try this and here's why, you know, versus like, I'm not pushing, you should get this because it's going to be better for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
do you have a good bourbon recommendation? I do. I have a lot. Listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's a bourbon for every occasion. There's one up in Fort Collins, actually. It's Old Elk, a really good bourbon. But I'm a fan of Buffalo Trace, Four Roses, Angel's Envy is a solid one. I would say like my go-to, I kind of categorize it as, are you making cocktails or are you just sipping it neat?
Right.
Or, you know, is it a gift for somebody? Because I would recommend different things. But if you're looking for my go-to bourbon, typically when I'm just making an old fashioned or different bourbon cocktails, is probably like a Maker's Mark or a Buffalo Trace. That's kind of the ones
classic.
But I mean, gosh, there's so many bourbons. I don't want to take it down that path because I literally could just.
Okay, now whiskeys. Just kidding.
Right. I like them all. Like the one thing I will say is like, people choose bourbons that are right for the cocktail. Like that's what I love about bartenders is they use specific spirits for a reason. And that's why it's like, if people ask me for it, I always jot back with like a couple questions because I want to know so I can recommend you the best for what you're doing.
Yeah, you know? That makes sense. And it sounds kind of too like just that is also the way you serve your audience and the way that you deliver content is you find those little questions that you're answering and then gift them the content.
Yeah.
So let's talk about recommendations for brands who are wanting to work with influencers. What are some do's and some don'ts?
I would say, I think do's and don'ts have to be connected to overarching goals and strategy, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just say, don't do this, because then I feel like I'm diving into tips and tricks and stuff like that, that if it's not connected to something like its strategy, then it's all for naught, right?
Yeah,
so I will say, like, first, do outline and map out what do you want to accomplish with that relationship with between a brand and an influencer. So the way it works typically, especially as if you're dealing with more global brands or whatnot, I mean, you can have direct to brand where a brand approaches me and they say, we have this product or whatever, and we're looking to drive sales or get awareness or whatever it is. And they come to me and we talk about that. Otherwise, it might be an agency as a middleman between me and a brand. And so they'll say, hey, we're building out this campaign for, say, Patron, and this campaign is going to be running for the next several months. You know, this is kind of what we're looking for from you and how to activate you. And here's the scope of work and what's your rate. So, you know, it really is dependent upon how your company is structured and what you're going for. So one, do map that out. And then do personalize those relationships.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I can't tell you how many messages I get a day from brands just like, hey, what are your rates?
Wow.
And I don't even respond to those at that point, because one, like, if you haven't taken the time to see what I do and see how I work with brands, and I think it's just like anything, like, you would never approach somebody like that and just ask them questions. So why would you do it in this space? Like, influencers are people and brands are made up of people, right? So it's no different in that case of like treating it like a relationship that you value. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to go about it. And there, like, if you approach these things from a standpoint of value, that changes all of your actions moving forward.
Absolutely.
And it just, like, both sides drop their guard, you know, and they figure out how to work together, you know? So I would say, like, influencer marketing as a term, it has shady elements to it, but it's shady because people don't approach each other with value. They just see it as a transaction. And I think that's the worst part about influencer marketing and just marketing in general.
Yeah.
But there's such a beauty to it, and it's such a powerful way to reach people. It's just navigating that and knowing how to do it.
What I want to, like, just add on to that is that it's essentially a strategic partnership.
It is.
An influencer is a brand that has a built, like you said, like, built trust with these people, and they have an audience. And if you're trying to leverage that audience, then come at them with respect.
Influencer marketing is a new term, but the fundamentals of influencer marketing, like, influencer marketing has been around forever. It's just the medium now is just social, right? And that's going to change, but influencer marketing, there are going to be other ways. And essentially what influencer marketing is a brand coming to me to spread their message and reach the audience that I have built up a trusting relationship with. Now, how we navigate those partnerships, like, those relationships, it's unique. It's not easy. There's no formula. It's not like, if you do this, then this will happen. It's more about find influencers. I hate the term influencer, by the way. The reason why I don't like the term influencer is because I feel like you're slapping a label on people, and based on your connotation or your thoughts on it, you treat everybody according to that. So it's kind of just lumping people in this bucket. And honestly, just because you have a K after the number, you know, if you have 10,000, 20,000 or million, does not mean you have influence.
Totally.
Because you can buy followers. Like, I could buy more followers. Those followers does not mean I influence them. So for me, with brands and stuff, I just think people, influencer has become a word that I think people are trying to navigate that, when the real situation is you're still dealing with people. You're still dealing with other businesses, and it's a strategic partnership, like you said. And so how to execute on that strategic partnership is really what people should be talking about, versus how do we approach influencers, which
it's B2B.
It is B2B.
That's what it is.
It is B2B. And sometimes what you'll find is that not every person that has built up an audience wants to work with brands.
Totally.
You know, I think just because you have a following does not mean you have to monetize it. And I respect that. Some people I know, they have a following and they still have a full-time job and they could be making more money, but they don't, because there's, like, for me, the hard part for me when I left my full-time job several years ago to do this is it in some aspects took the fun away. I don't want to say it took the fun away, but it changed the fun.
You know,
it became, you know, I no longer made drinks just for me. I made drinks and put content out because I also had to take into consideration what does my audience want,
yeah,
right? You have to understand like what they value and provide that value, or else you don't really have a business.
I want to talk about Earn Your Booze.
Mm-hmm.
So when did that happen?
Earn Your Booze happened, we started about a year and a half ago. So it's a company that I started with my business partner, Justin Cross. He's based in Phoenix. So we started and launched in Phoenix, but it initially started because I would go to the gym. I'm a former collegiate basketball player. I grew up playing basketball and stuff. Mm-hmm. So athletics has always been a part of my life. And so being in the world of drink, like traveling and stuff and eating out and doing these things, it's like you have to, it can get away from you now.
Yeah,
so I noticed myself, I'm like, hey, I got to get to the gym. And so every time I was go to the gym, I would post on my Instagram stories like, earn your booze, earn your booze. And mm-hmm. I just said it over and over and over. And then people started catching on. And then we made shirts. And at first when I started, I just thought we were going to do shirts. And then Justin kind of spearheaded an event where we partnered with the brewery and we brought in a trainer and we threw this workout and then everybody stayed at the brewery and drank after. And then it just was like, this is really cool, actually.
Yeah.
So it shifted away from apparel into an event-based company. So that started about a year and a half ago. And now it took us about a year to figure out, what do we have here? Like, it's just, mm-hmm. we have something. And so that's kind of where we're at, where we know now what it is. And now it's going really well.
So where does that kind of land as far as, is this a way to monetize or is this a new way to reach different sectors of your audience?
Is it a way to monetize? In some ways, yes. But I think what Earn Your Booze has become and other media stuff that I've started, like Apartment Bartender just gave me a platform to do what I wanted to do the whole time. And if I went and started Earn Your Booze without ever having Apartment Bartender, it would have taken a lot more time to get to where we're at now because I didn't know anything about the industry and any of that stuff. So Earn Your Booze in itself is a company, but it also just represents another way, like you said, of reaching people in a different space and just adding value there. So fitness was never I like fitness, but I would never consider myself to be somebody that can speak on it. If I could provide a fun forum for people to come and have a good time, build camaraderie, get a good sweat session in, and then, have a good cocktail after, and to just promote that mindset of hey, if you are imbibing and eating and enjoying the things that you want and the things mm-hmm. that you have, make sure that you earn it.
Yeah.
Make sure that you do what you have to do to take care of your mind and your body, because mm-hmm. ultimately that's going to, hopefully prolong your life so that you can continue to enjoy the things in this life.
So one thing that you mentioned, you said it's hard to talk about yourself. And when you're talking to an audience that you are the focus of that audience, they still say make it about them. So how do you toe the line between being the person who is the face of the account and also not talking about just yourself?
That's been really hard for me. And I would say several months ago, I just towards the end of last year, I started going through this period of frustration with what I was doing and burnout. And I was just kind of wrestling with where is everything? And it wasn't until I accepted that Apartment Bartender is now bigger than me. It's mm-hmm. not about Elliot anymore. It's about the community. It's so much bigger than me. And once I accepted that, it gave me, in a sense, the ability to look at it from an objective point of view. And so when I'm speaking, when I was up, speaking with Marcus on the live stream, I think my story is important to deliver a message that ultimately will help the people in the end, because my story and my experience has allowed me to build up expertise and know-how
mm-hmm.
that I can now tell to other people so that they can use that and apply it to what they're doing, right? So that's when I think it's really important to talk about yourself, in the context of hey, here's my experience, here's my story, and here's what I learned, and here's how I think that can apply to what brands and agencies are doing.
So let's get into Instagram tips.
Yeah.
How do you recommend someone grow their Instagram organically? Let's say they have a normal amount of people followers between mm-hmm. 50 and 300 right now.
Right.
That's what I have. Yeah. That's why I say normal.
I have kind of a series of questions I would walk people through. Mm-hmm. Instead of telling them do this, do this, do this, I like to kind of take the approach of, okay, if you have X amount, like, what are you trying to accomplish, first of all? So do you want to grow a following to sell a product? Do you want to grow a following to become a quote-unquote influencer? Do you want to work with brands? Like, what do you want? And you'll find that most people don't know what they want to do yet. And it's hard to implement a strategy when you don't know what you want to do. So I would say, like, one, figure out what you're trying to accomplish, because that is going to ultimately direct the content that you create, right? And so now, when, if you say, let's say, for example, what in this case, what do you feel like is the most, like, the end goal? Do you think it's like selling a product, or?
Let's say, I would say most of the people listening want to sell something.
Okay. So
they already have a, they probably already have a business or a brand.
Okay. So if you're just starting out and you have a business or a brand, you want to sell something, one thing you have to understand is that the majority of users on Instagram are consumers, right? Just everyday, you know, people at home. So naturally, when they come across a brand, the first thing in their mind is like, what are they trying to sell me? What are you going to sell me? And honestly, why do I need your product? Especially if it's something where there are 10 other options. The same, like, the liquor world is perfect for this, because it's like, hey, we have a new bourbon. We want to sell our bourbon. Like, why should I care about your bourbon if I have 100 other bourbons that I like?
Yeah.
You know, so
these aren't hard to get through.
Instagram has become saturated and noisy.
Absolutely.
So the real questions that I feel like people want is, like, how do I get people to care about what I'm selling? And to get people to care about what you're selling, you have to care about the people that are following you. And there's a way to do that. And so I like to use examples of things that where brands are doing it really well. And the brands that do it really well on social add personality and persona to what they're doing. They almost personalize their brand and their product, unless it's, you know, say a Lululemon, you know, one of my partners in, like, Nike and stuff like that. They have an entire marketing team and stuff like that. So you kind of have to take a look at, what are you trying to accomplish? Who's following you? Like, who are you selling to? Where are they? And how do you communicate with them? And in that way, like, how do you add value to them where they're at? And everybody wants to grow their following. But if you have 300, what are you doing for the 300 that are for you versus the 300,000?
Hell yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's
like, if you're not taking care of your 300, you're sure as hell not going to take care of your, you know, 3,000 or however many it gets to. So the way I think about it is, like, okay, if I'm taking care of them, say each person tells a friend to follow you, that's 600 now. Say six, like, that other 300 tells a friend, like, now you have 900. And that's how it grows. But it grows by adding value to the people that are already on board with you.
Yeah. So how do you maintain your audience? Does it require a lot of, like, time looking at comments? Do you go and comment on other people's pages? Do you follow and then unfollow?
It's very day to day. And I don't personally have time anymore to be answering all direct messages or responding to the comments and likes and monitoring it. It's just, in the beginning, it took a lot of care. And honestly, I was probably on my phone a lot more than I care to admit, which I know most people running a business don't have time to do that. And I understand that now. And what I will say, though, is, like, Instagram is supplemental to your business. It's not the end all be all. Some people run a business on Instagram or on Facebook or other social platforms. If you do, you kind of are at the mercy of Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah.
And so for me, I just think it's smart. You have to have something outside of Instagram that Instagram can be used as a supplemental tool versus, like, it's the end all be all. Like, Instagram for me for a couple of years was the end all be all. And say it shut down, I would have no other revenue stream. So for me, I built up other expertise and other know-how outside of that, whether that be producing digital content or this. So now Instagram, it kind of takes the pressure off of it. It can be what I want to be to help with the other businesses that I have. But as far as engaging with your audience, respond to your comments, you know, curate some Instagram stories that aren't as perfect. You know, it can be off the cuff stuff. It could be things where people can see, like, hey, this is an actual company. You know, this is actual, there are actual people in this company.
Yeah.
don't put so much emphasis on in-feed posts, because Instagram stories are really important now and it's more real-time content. Mm-hmm. And if you do curate, if you for the in-feed post, you have to curate quality visual content.
This is a question we ask everyone on the DM podcast, but if you could go back in time and you speak to 25-year-old Elliot, what would you tell him?
Gosh, I would tell myself so much. I wouldn't even, it wouldn't be one thing. If I could go back, I'd actually want to sit down with 25-year-old Elliot and have a cocktail and
yeah.
like talk about just not telling something. I would listen to him.
You What'd know? You make him?
I would sit down over a couple old fashions for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my go-to. An old fashioned for me, it's not just a drink. I mean, I like a lot of other cocktails, but an old fashioned for me was that one cocktail that I had. There was this bar in Chicago called Billy Sunday, and I was on my way to Chicago to see my mom, and I had gotten this magazine called Imbibe, and in Imbibe, it's focuses on industry stuff, and so I remember I looked up, and they were featuring Chicago bars, and it was around the time when I was getting in everything. I didn't really know that much about the cocktail world, and Billy Sunday was a bar 5 minutes up the road from my mom's place, so we went there, and I ordered an old-fashioned. It was the first time I saw Clear Eyes, and the first time, like, I saw the bartender help me to understand what bitters are, and they're explaining
yeah.
all that stuff.
Wow.
All that to say, old-fashioned takes me back to that moment. Hmm. And that moment was really significant for me and realizing, like, yes, I want to be a part of this world.
Mm-hmm.
So all that to go back to the question about what would I tell myself, I would just, I think a lot of times that question, like, people will say, like, I would tell you, be patient. But 25-year-old Elliot didn't want to hear be patient,
right?
I would tell you, just have fun. But 25-year-old Elliot was having fun, but still want to do something. So I would probably just listen and say, what do you want to do? And just, you know, hear me out and just kind of help myself think about what he's doing. And I think the biggest thing that if I go back, I would have implemented more structure early on.
Hmm.
I don't think I understood how a company is structured. I didn't understand. I had never started a business, so I didn't really understand how to structure it in a way that it could function, not without me, but it could function in other ways than just me having to spend time. And so I'd probably talk about and go over like how to implement a structure into what I was doing. Because I was just kind of like flying by the seat of my pants. I'm like, all right, it's go time.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah. And you know what? It led me to here.
I don't think we've ever had anyone say, I would listen. I love that.
I can think back to when I was 25 and working at the company I was at. And I remember going home and taking pictures of my cocktails was, for me, it was symbolic because it helped me to not think about how stuck I felt in my life at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I need to know what I want to do for the rest of my life. I felt like, and so taking pictures of cocktails was the one thing that I had that I didn't care. I just was doing it. I wasn't trying to be a business. I wasn't, and it was almost like it took the pressure off.
Mm.
It was just, and that's why I think it's so unique that it grew into what it is now. And the reason I say all that is because a lot of businesses and brands, they think they have to force it.
Yeah.
And I know there are steps, and I wish I could dive into those steps because there certainly are steps. But I would say take the pressure off. Like,
mm-hmm.
like people will listen if you listen to them. People will buy your product if you add value to them.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of thinking, how can I get people to buy my product? Think about, how can I give people something that helps them get what they want? Because if they see you as a resource for them, then they will then want to follow you, want to buy whatever you have. You know, so
totally.
Structure your products around stuff that people actually want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah, I think that's huge. So before we go, where can people find more about you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at apartmentbartender, apartmentbartender.com, earnyourbooze.com, earnyourbooze on Instagram. So I have a couple different outlets, but yeah, you can find me on social media. And then if you want to get in contact, people can send a message or send a message to my email. I'm pretty responsive and stuff like that. So yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, this appreciate
awesome.
It.
You've been listening to the Digital Marketer Podcast. For more information and show notes, go to digitalmarketer.com/podcast. Thank you for listening.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up. Because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and three unique design themes for each holiday. The promo pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.